It's a busy world. We know you've got places to be and things to do. That's why you should fly Earnest Airlines.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
On Earnest Airlines, every seat is first class.
Hey, man, get your elbow out of my eye.
And our food service is like going to a five-star restaurant.
Hot dogs! Get you hot dogs!
But one of our greatest features on Earnest Airlines is world-famous financial guru, David Earnest. During your flight, David Earnest will walk through the cabin, answering questions and showing you how to get the most out of your money. So book your flight today. Just call 334-279-7431. That's 334-279-7431. Get your financial future off the ground today with Earnest Airlines. In-flight menu subject to change.
Moldy cheese sandwiches. Get your moldy cheese sandwiches here.
And due to public opinion, we will no longer be showing Airport 77 as our in-flight movie. Call Earnest Airlines at 334-279-7431.
Super Secret Studio, which is right now smack dab in the middle of the luxurious broadcast facility we know as Blue Water Broadcasting. It's the Health and Wealth Show, the 30-minute radio program that just turned into a 60-minute radio program. That's twice the fun, twice the great information, and twice the David Earnest. Now, here he is, ladies and gentlemen. He's the dude that won't cop out when there's danger all about. It's David Earnest talking about money.
Talking about money.
Now, see, I think I redeemed myself from last night.
Absolutely. Now, that was a fantastic intro.
Well, there you go.
Intro.
Well, Greg spotted me a couple of minutes here, and we got in and
got everything plugged in
and ready to go, and we've got like 56 minutes left. So what do you want to talk about? Actually, we have a guest coming, and I need to keep an eye on my phone.
Yeah,
here.
Keep an eye on your phone there.
David Woods.
Yes, he's coming in to talk about the city's financial plan. And I ask you out there in Radio Land, what is your financial plan? And how your financial plan and the city of Montgomery's financial plan go hand in hand.
That would be hand in hand. And we will have David here for in just a few minutes. I think the lovely Mrs. David Woods is coming in.
Are they locked out?
They probably are, but she's supposed to send me a text and let me know. Well, wait a minute. There she is. Now, it says on the way, so when she lets me know
then
she's down there, you'll have to run because my running days are over.
I'll run and let her in.
And we'll play something funny or do something.
Okay, that sounds really, really good.
You'll have to go real, real fast.
I can still run fast. You know, when I was playing football, I could run 100 yards in 11 seconds.
Really?
Which was not so slow.
I could fall that far in 11 seconds if there's no limbs in the tree.
But, you know, there were some folks that were a little faster, but, I could get out of the way if I needed to.
But I think back a lot of times that when I was going to the old Wetumpka Middle School over there in Wetumpka.
That's a mouthful.
I had a mouthful of something there. Anyway, I was at the Wetumpka Middle School, and they went out there, and they ran us they took like a grader and went around a quarter-mile track so we could run on the track, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember, 12, 13 years old, just if I could have gone just a little bit faster,
mm-hmm. I could have probably gotten airborne. I mean, I could just run so fast.
You felt like you could fly.
Yeah. Now.
Well, you know, Aranis Airlines, you can fly on that.
Yes. Know? But now, you know, I get in the plane and they say, sir, can we have you sit in the middle of the plane so we're not like top
I'm not laughing at
head.
You. I'm just laughing at the situation.
I got on one of those small ones one time and there was a dude probably had 100 pounds on me, and we were both in the back because that's where the big seats were, you know?
Yeah.
And we actually had to flip to see who would have to go sit in the front so it'd be even.
Well, at least you're trying to be fair.
Yeah, well, you know, he brought it up. I said, sure, man,
and
whatever
you
want to do.
That's a biggie. Being fair is your share fair. In other words, are you getting the fair shake in your retirement future?
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting a fair shake in your retirement plan? A lot of folks, well, I heard, I hadn't checked it yet, but I heard the Dow went way down today. I don't know if it recovered back any or not, but, you know, I don't really have to worry about those kind of things as much as, say, like the folks that are really naked in the market. And, you know, you got that thing called the naked portfolio.
We'll be playing that sometime.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're naked in the stock market and you can't save yourself, in other words, there's no life preserver, there's no parachute, no politician, no doctor, no financial advisor, no financial planner, no whatever, except maybe God himself, could save you from the consequences of a free fall in the market.
Yes.
You can't get out of it. You know, they've been trying to do these things called circuit breakers.
Yeah.
But they only hold so long. You know, they try to put the move on the market. In other words, circuit break it, stop it. You know, they can't do anything but just, like, shut it down is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
They say, no more trades. Well, we're in free fall. Well, let's just stop right there in midair, you know. That's what they do.
Got a question.
Yeah.
All this impeachment stuff. Now, has that affected the market any to this
point?
You
asking my opinion?
Yes.
Absolutely. I think that's the reason why all these bad things are happening. And I think, potentially, they're going to get much worse.
And I got another question.
Yes.
And this is one of them rhetorical questions.
Okay.
So, Bob, rhetorical, if you're out there and you want to call in, 272-9228 if you want to call us. They said the whistleblower has been getting death threats.
But how do they know how to give him a death threat?
Aha! There you go. They have not.
I mean, like.
Yeah, they don't.
How do they know who he is to give him death? Unless it's their internal people want to kill him.
Probably.
And when I say their internal people, I'm not going to say who they are, but you know who I'm talking about. Supposedly, it's some kind of CIA operative. You know, the CIA is supposed to be fair.
And they said that, what's his name, Barr, has gone rogue. I think that might be code for he ain't playing their game no more. He's working on something else.
Well, you know.
He's going to expose the deep state, they say.
He supposedly had already had some stuff found out, and he was going to reveal it as soon as he could. And they saw this coming. And it's like fight fire with fire.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's do something before they do something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're in the back, you're going to fight somebody, you hit them first. Mm-hmm. Let's hit them first before they hit us.
Yeah, preemptive strike.
Yeah, let's hit them where it hurts real quick so it won't look right and it look like it's all their fault. And we'll just make out like that it's their fault, you see? And that's what it looks like to me. In other words, you know, just looking at it, it looks like it was a preemptive strike. Just like you said, I do believe that it is being done just to throw the truth off track.
And I was watching that, Fox News today. And what's her name? Nancy Pelosi was on there. And bless her heart, Schiff, and I got to be careful when I say that.
He's kind of shifty.
Yeah, shifty Schiff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, his last name is not Schiff.
What is it?
Fur Brains. Schiffer. Well, anyhow, Nancy's on there, and bless her heart, I think he had his hand up her back of her blouse, making her mouth move, because she's lost. She just looks like she don't know where
well,
she is.
I think that if she moves the wrong way, she'll crack.
Yeah, well.
I mean, like, literally,
she,
you know?
Botox is a friend. And 2729228, that's the number here.
Yeah.
And if you want to call David Ernest, now this would be his line for to talk to him about your finances. And
to talk
that,
live.
Yes, that is, what is that? What's, that's
2797431. That's the number if you
down.
Just want me to call you back later on,
right.
Or you want an appointment, you know, a complimentary free appointment for information about your retirement plan. And, you know, in these shifty times.
Yes.
And uncertainties, like the stock market is really teeter-tottering right now. You know, if you're worried about that, you probably need to give someone like me a call, because I'm an asset preservationist. I do not put people in places where they can lose their money when the market drops. But if the market goes up, you can make plenty of money. And so this is really for the folks who want to conserve what they've already got.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're trying to build up and you're young, the market, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
From my viewpoint. But, you know, there's a lot of different religions out there, and there's a lot of different ways to conserve your assets out there. But I think mine's the best. Why? Because it's guaranteed. On
Ooh.
Top of using methodologies, it's guaranteed by insurance companies not to be able to go away. And that's the reason why I think it's good, because it has the absolute guarantee. You notice I'm using that word guaranteed, 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 guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, most financial people cannot use that word guaranteed, guaranteed. If they say it, they're going to be in a lot of hot water.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep, you keep going.
Okay, was well, somebody coming on the line?
I'm going to see who's on the phone.
Oh, yeah, see who they're there. See who they bees first. But, yeah, so guarantees are a very, very important thing to have when you're dealing with something like the stock market, something like your retirement plan, something like your IRA, something like your rollover 401k. So that it can be conserved for your retirement and rainy day fun.
There, you did well. And we have a phone call. This is the first phone call that we've actually gotten.
Really? Should we have bells and whistles running?
Well, I'll get those later, but this is Penny.
Okay.
And Penny says she has a Social Security retirement question.
I think I can answer some of those.
Penny, are you there? Penny?
Hello, Penny.
Oh, wait a minute.
Penny, for your thoughts.
Penny, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, Penny. David Ernest.
I'm so happy you're there.
Hey, David.
David's right there with you.
Penny, for your thoughts, Penny.
Absolutely. Hey, I would love to know your opinion. I think they said the Social Security is expected to be insolvent by the year 2032. Is that right or wrong?
I've heard those. Heard those things. That's close.
Yes, and then. Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. And then
but,
let me ask you this.
The world's going to end in 12 years, so, you know, we won't have
to
worry.
So you think it's 12?
That's what that crazy woman said.
So my next question is do you think part of the downfall as to why they're going to become insolvent so quickly is because all those wonderful civil service and government and state employees were able to draw a retirement after just 20 years of service?
It didn't help. And here's
no, it didn't.
It didn't help.
And
it
they
didn't
never
help.
Paid Social Security, remember? They didn't pay into Social Security. They only paid into their retirement.
Right. And there's mm-hmm. things that if you were to come to one of my Social Security seminars, mm-hmm. that we talk about that. Of course, I don't badmouth the employees because it's not their fault.
No.
Hey.
Well, now, wait a minute. They didn't mind taking the money, so I disagree with you a little
well, there
bit.
There you go.
I disagree with you a little bit.
Okay. Penny, can you hang on a second, Penny? We've got to do something. We've got David Woods at the door. I'm going to send
absolutely.
David to get David Woods, and when he gets back, we'll finish your question, then we'll talk to David.
Yes.
Okay?
Awesome.
Yes. I'll be right back, Penny.
Okay, and you go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do this because, you know, Rick Peters was kind of concerned about us being up here, figured that we might not know what to say or what not to say on the radio. So here we go. We've got a little something here that lets him know that we're okay. Yeah, we really are. A little slow getting stuff to play, but we're okay.
Hello. There are many words you cannot say on the radio. Words like and luncheon meat. Oh, you can say that on the radio. My bad. But there are many other words you cannot say on the radio. Mm-hmm. Words like and one of my favorites. In everyday life, there are many things that can make you say these words. Someone cuts you off in traffic.
You!
The bus leaves without you.
What the?
Or your team misses a field goal.
Well, I'll just be a...
But there's one thing that will make you say bad words that you can avoid. If you have a portfolio and it needs a little tweaking, call David Ernest at 334-279-7431. Because not calling David Ernest will lead to you saying words like... And another one of my favorites. So call David Ernest today, 279-7431. That's 279-7431. Call him today, and I will see you again soon.
Oh, I stubbed my toe. Son of a...
And that's stuff you can't say on the radio. Penny, you still there?
I am here.
Okay, I've got everybody in here now. David Woods and Mrs. Woods... Everybody's here. David, Ernest is here. I'm here.
Always Ernest.
But David, you want to finish answering her question?
Yes, Penny. Where were we on your question? You were going to ask.
We were talking about I wanted to know your opinion in regards to, do you think the state, federal, and all the city employees who were able to draw Social Security, even though they didn't pay probably a year into it, was a big factor in the insolvency of our Social Security.
I think that all added into the fact, but it wasn't the only thing by any means. I do think that the biggest problem is that there's more money going out than coming in. And less people paid in that needed to be paid in.
They're drawing out.
Right. Yeah. And so it's going to have a problem. It's probably going to be cut down to about 80% or the taxes will be raised. One of the two. There's no other way around it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, if the people who work for the federal government, state, city that weren't paying in, remember, the compound interest of money, I think that would have grown a lot had they paid into it way back when they first started. How much we could have made off of it, who knows?
Well, it would be a lot to consider.
It'd be a big money.
It'd be a lot.
It'd be a big amount of money, absolutely. I just wanted to know your opinion on that, and I'm going to have to come see one of your speaker engagements. I'm gonna have to check into that.
Yeah, check into that. You can call me at 279-7431, and we can fix you up.
Awesome. Nice talking to you. Y'all have a great day.
Nice talking to you, Penny.
Thanks, Penny. Thank you. Appreciate the call. And that was a good one, too.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right. And we have got all kind of folks here tonight. I've got to figure out how to use the phone. We've got David Woods, candidate for mayor. How are you, sir?
We're doing great.
And,
thank you.
And
Donna Woods.
Donna
my wife's here.
Why should I not know her name? Because my wife's name is Donna. I got your mic on there. Now
you can. Do? Okay. Well, I couldn't hear what's going on. So, okay. I want to make sure.
I don't see any more headphones around. Well, there's nothing going on other than
nothing
this.
Nothing going on. Okay,
so
cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for having us.
So, how's it feel to be the wife of the future mayor?
Well, we've got to get there first.
Yes, you do. And David, I'm so glad to have you here. You know, me and you go back a ways.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact,
80s.
Yes, I worked for your dad. And your dad, he was something else now. And I tell people this, if you ever get to talking to Mr. Woods and you get him off on aviation or war stories, get lunch brought in and just...
Get ready to listen.
Tell everybody to take the rest of the afternoon off because he had some stories.
He did, and what was wonderful is he shared the stories.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of war veterans that have that come back, they internalize what they saw. Well, my dad, he really spent a lot of time sharing what he saw in World War II. And like Rusty said, it was just an educational experience to be around him. Donna knows... he was proud to be a soldier. He was proud to serve his country. And even though he got severely burned in the plane crash, he just saw that as a badge of honor. It never was an obstacle to him. It was just what happened in war. And he was proud to have gone through it. Well, but he would tell some stories.
He told me one time, David, he says, you know, one thing that I never have to do twice.
Introduce myself.
That's exactly what he said.
Well, when people remember you when you're severely burned like he was. And so he had a good sense of humor.
He did not let that stop him, because when I first started working for him, he was in his late 70s, I guess, and he was driving all over the place, going all over the place, doing stuff. He had deals working and everything. And
it's unbelievable what he could keep in his head.
I was always tickled to see him, because he would always send me on an errand somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what one of them was, and now you probably know, but he wanted a hat one day. He wanted a Homburg, and nobody knew what a Homburg. I think they thought he wanted a hamburger. So he sent me over to Ronnie's down in Dothan, went in there and told Mr. Ronnie what he wanted. We got him this big old black fedora. It looked good. And he put it on, and he had it turned up all the way around. I said, Mr. Woods, give me that hat. And I took his hat and turned it down.
Thank you.
He looked so good. He looked sharp.
You. Well, he liked wearing a hat.
He always wore hats.
And that hat looked
always
good on him,
hat.
Too. And you know, as I say, I worked for him. But he would say, I need so-and-so. Yeah, get that big fella. He'll go get it. And so he knew I was the big fella, and he knew I was his go-to guy.
Thank you very much
now,
for helping him out.
I know David has got some questions for David about finances here in the city and your plan and your ideas. Yeah.
First of all, I want to say thank you for coming on you know, appreciating Montgomery as much as you do and wanting to do the things that you want to do for Montgomery. And I know me as a financial consultant, advisor kind of person, when I sit down with someone, you know, we build what we call a financial plan.
Right.
So what I want to talk to you about is the financial plan future that you see for Montgomery. If you become the mayor of Montgomery, what do you see as Montgomery's financial plan? And I want to interject into this, because I was talking to Rick Peter, who's, you know, Rick Peters of the station. He said that you showed him, I think it was several years ago, if I remember what he said, an analysis that showed all the different budgets and how that we were in the red and the black and all these things. And he said that you probably had more knowledge and more you know, ability to know what was good and bad than anybody probably in the whole city.
Well, thank you, David. And, you know, as an owner-operator of a business, you learn that the financial statement is your best gauge for understanding the health of a business. So once we got interested in the mayor's race several years ago, I started studying the finances of the city. You can go online. It's open and available. And You can look at their revenues, the expenses. You can go back many years and see where they've increased, where they've not increased. And you learn a lot about a lot about any business by reading the financial statement. And the city of Montgomery is a large business. They have 2,400 employees. They have the budget this year is $260 million. So that's a good-sized business. And I think it behooves anyone who's interested in being the leader of a city to really get a grasp in advance of the financial condition of that city. Now, I think what Rick was referring to is this report I have. And, you know, all cities have to report their financial information to Moody's rating service on a standardized form. And that, because what I was doing earlier, I was studying different cities and comparing them to Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Cities like Mobile, Huntsville, Columbus, mm-hmm. Jackson, Mississippi, mm-hmm. just to see where we stacked up income, expenses. It was hard because they didn't have a standard format. They were all different as far as how they expensed items and amortized capital expenditures and even how they booked revenue. But I found out with Moody's, all cities in America have to use a standard form. So then you're comparing apples to apples. And so what I was showing Rick is this chart here, where there's five cities in Alabama that we took off of the Moody's report. Moody's is the rating service in New York that all cities share their revenues with, so that the investors, Wall Street, can look at and decide if they're going to float bonds in a particular, buy bonds in a city, is that city healthy,
mm-hmm.
or is that city unhealthy?
Right.
And, anyway, so this was just the chart.
A lot of material you have there, David. It looks like you've really gone into some fine, extreme detail about this city's debt.
Yes, the city has debt, and this lets you know, in addition to just financial information, population information, growth over 20 years. You go back as far as you want, or go back quite a while. I went back to, I think, 1990 and looked at population. It lets you know...
In other words, comparing us to, say, like, I can remember maybe 20 years ago when Montgomery was being compared to, say, like Huntsville and maybe Columbus, Georgia, and we were neck and neck a lot of times with him. But where are we now?
Well, Montgomery's still, as we speak, the second largest city in the state.
Yeah.
Birmingham's first. We're second.
Mm-hmm.
But Huntsville's moving up fast because Huntsville's a growth city.
Right.
We're at about 195,000 people. They're in low, I think, 192,000 right now. And they're gaining each year, and we're losing. Last year, I'm sad to say, we lost 1,300 people in Montgomery.
Wow. That's a lot.
We peaked at in 2011, population-wise, right at 205,000. Now we're down, like I said, around 198,000 and declining. And that's not good, because when you have a... We've lost 7,000 people since our peak in 2011. But the rate of loss this past year was pretty substantial. You know, the previous 3 or 4 years, we were losing 500-600 people a year. This past year, as we just said, we lost 1,300.
That sounds like a free fall almost.
Well, that's not a good thing, because those are higher income positions. Those are
right.
People who can leave a city because they're not happy with, and most the number one reason is education. And so when you lose these homes, these household incomes of over $100,000, mm-hmm. that creates a little, you know, a financial void here. For example,
right.
if someone leaves here and moves to Huntsville mm-hmm. or Birmingham, they no longer buy groceries here. They no longer go to the drugstore here. They no longer have their cars repaired here. If they need new shoes, they buy them in Birmingham or wherever they live. If they need financial services, they'll probably hire a local financial advisor in Birmingham in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So it really moves a lot of revenue out of Montgomery when we lose families. So one of our goals as mayor is to first stop the out-migration, turn it around, and create reverse migration. We want to turn Montgomery into a growing city, and it can be done through good leadership. Let me give you an example. Chattanooga, Tennessee, which right now most of us know as a vibrant, booming, happening city.
That's true.
In 2001, it was a declining population city. They had major issues with the school system. Downtown was not really active. And they were headed in a direction that was probably not good for Chattanooga. But the leadership there... focused on it, came up with a plan. They started aggressively marketing Chattanooga. They started. They worked on their school system. They improved their schools. They went out and recruited corporate America all over the U.S. They really attracted big businesses to Chattanooga through some of the benefits which we also have: affordable housing, lower property taxes. Low commute time, and that appealed to these businesses. They actually brought a lot of companies in from California in the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
in the 2000s. In the 2000s. But now, you go to Chattanooga downtown, it looks almost like a mini Silicon Valley or a mini Austin.
I know. I grew up 30 miles from Chattanooga.
Well,
so
speak up, David.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I go up there every now and then and look around, and you know, it does concern me about Montgomery when I see what's going on in Huntsville. It concerns me especially when I see when I look at Chattanooga, they got the river and all
right.
that stuff, and I'm thinking, why can't we do that?
See, we have a lot of similar characteristics, as does Chattanooga.
Uh huh.
And we actually have some pluses they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
We have two military bases.
That's right.
That's a big plus.
It is.
Right, we're farther south. We're the state capital. We have an enormous injection of financial resources into our economy every year just because of the the government being based here, the state government.
Exactly.
So we're probably in a better position to turn Montgomery into a growing city than Chattanooga was 15 years ago.
And we got a baseball team.
You make a good point.
We got a zoo.
We got Froyo.
Oh, we got one of the best zoos.
We got Froyo, man, you know.
Yeah.
But you mentioned a baseball team. That is a big driver for a city, a downtown baseball team, because it brings tens of thousands of people into downtown every summer.
The biggest and baddest broadcast in all the land.
Oh.
Happy Hour.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
But a baseball team draws a lot of people into a downtown area.
Sorry,
and people want, and bodies attract bodies.
Right.
Boots on the ground is the name of the game.
Absolutely. Boots on the ground. And that's what we need. We need someone that has the experience, the knowledge, and the desire. We need someone who has the burning desire. I feel it from you, David. I can feel it.
Thank you. Because that we do have a burning desire. You know, as you know, I'm a very strong Christian. I'm a religious man, and I just see I believe that God wants us to help people. He's very clear in the Bible on that. We have 200,000 people in Montgomery, almost. They deserve a better quality of life. They deserve a better city to live in. Our students, our school students, deserve a better school. You had access to a good education. Rusty had access to a good education. Donna did. And that's why we are who we are today. Part of the reason is we had great schools to attend.
Right.
Well, in Montgomery, our school system is not offering that same quality of education that we were exposed to. And it's not these children's, it's not their fault. It's society's responsibility to offer it, because they're young, they're children. And our job is to help them receive an education so that they can become productive members of society one day. So, yes, we're very passionate about it. I wake up right now thinking about our school children, 28,000. We had almost 2,000 enter kindergarten last month.
That's a lot.
How many?
2,000.
Wow.
Yeah, Montgomery's a big school system. You know, if you look at some of the other cities around the state, they're split. You know, they'll have one city will have three or four systems. Even Huntsville, our system's bigger than theirs.
Do you find that may be a detraction right there, having more than one school system, have this little thing over here, the thing over here, and nobody knows what anybody's doing?
Probably. So the good thing is we have one large school system with 28,000 students. So we have one system to focus on. And as we put time, effort, energy behind it with the superintendent, Board of Education, parents, other interested parties, state leaders, we'll make improvements. We'll come up with solutions. I think everyone involved really has a desire to improve it right now. We've actually been instructed by Maxwell Air Force Base and General Cotton to improve our school system. So we're highly motivated for that reason, because we want to keep Maxwell and Gunner happy.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But really, we're more motivated because of the responsibility to the children.
That's the what it should be.
Let me add something there. Dave and I have been fortunate enough, blessed enough, to travel worldwide with ministry and to countries like Kenya and Zimbabwe and Honduras and India. I mean, and plus, 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 plus. And so we've seen children in lesser circumstances to where they, the possibility of a good education is not, it's just not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then, you know, you turn that around. And first of all, that gives us a heart for children, that, you know, to see the possibilities of children not being realized. So, but then you turn that around and you think, well, this is Montgomery, Alabama. This is the capital of the state of Alabama. This is the United States. Every child in this city is deserving of a platform of a vessel to make them the best they can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree with you.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and let me tell you, she mentioned going on mission trips to different countries. We were in Zimbabwe. We visited several schools, because part of the mission of that trip was to deliver school supplies to schools. They'd been shipped over and were in a container, so every day we'd have truckloads of school supplies to drive to take to different schools in the bush. I mean, dirt roads, 2-hour trips, 1-hour trips on these bumpy,
almost rutty, a road, maybe almost maybe roads. A trail.
Yeah,
more like an animal trail.
Animals on it, but we saw schools where the schools were so overcrowded there that they had classrooms outdoors under the trees. Uh-huh. So if they had, say, 8 large trees on the campus of a school, and by the way, these schools had no electricity, no running water, no lights, just open windows. And it is warm in Zimbabwe.
But they got that thirst for knowledge.
Rusty, their thirst for knowledge is like thirst for hunger if you've missed 2 meals in a row.
Uh-huh.
They want knowledge. So they're sitting on benches. And benches really are split logs. Under a tree with a teacher up front with, say, 15 children. And they pay attention. They, focus in on that teacher. And the teacher has a sheet of plywood, and that's the chalkboard. We delivered chalk, and I'm telling you would have thought we were giving these people.
They jumped up and down and cheered for boxes of
amazing.
Chalk.
We delivered, we had a lot of chalk.
I bet that made you feel so good.
The teachers would squeeze you, they'd hug you so tight just for chalk.
That's amazing.
They don't have books.
Yes.
And so they teach verbally, and the children are mostly oral learners.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have a sheet of plywood and chalk, and they would spell out words. And we watched them. We have a lot of pictures from different cities or different places around the world where these schools just, they improvise. And the children, not only do they adapt, they learn, and they learn very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they, because they have an appetite, Rusty, as you said.
And I believe that our children here in Montgomery have an extreme appetite also. I just think they need a chance.
Yes.
To get where they need to go. And we need someone who's over this city, in charge, the CEO per se, the CFO, CEO, the financial guy that can get us there. And that's what we're looking for. That's what the whole city's looking for. And that's why I'm so impressed with these numbers you brought in here about all these things you've been studying and analyzing. It looks like you've been doing a lot of homework, David. Lot of homework.
We have. We've done a lot of homework because we fully expect to win, and we want to be prepared when we become mayor of Montgomery.
And I believe you.
We don't want to start in November. We started last November reading about the city, meeting with city officials, asking questions, and they're very forthcoming with answers when you talk with them. We've spent time with retired city employees. You learn a lot from the retirees.
And absolutely.
They've spent the whole career there.
Yes.
They've seen different leaders, and they'll explain
the history.
The history, yes, David.
Yes.
And so,
and who did what and what happened and all these things and the lessons they were learned from it.
Correct.
Yes.
So we've been in a learning mode for the past year.
Well, let's take a short break just to kind of catch our breath here. Well, if you know anybody that can pay some bills for us. And we'll just take a quick break, catch our breath. We'll be right back with more Health and Wealth Show with David Ernest and our special guest, mayoral candidate David Woods and Donna Woods. And we'll be back in just moments. Don't go away.
Mark your calendars for October the 26th. That's the Saturday before Halloween, because we're having a monster smash at 8125 Decker Lane. Bouncy houses, trunk or treat, free pizza from Folcarelli's Pizza, and it's all free! All you have to do is show up at 8125 Decker Lane, October 26th from noon until 5.
Oh, hey, man. Hey, Elvis. Oh, you want this to be really scary?
Yeah, we can stand to scare it up a little bit. Can you help me out?
Yeah, man. Check this out.
A homer. Boom.
Thanks, Elvis.
No problem, man. Just TCB, you know me.
Did I mention you could win a free membership to Anytime Fitness?
And Elvis will be there, too.
And we'll have a big TV set up so you don't miss the game.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's Saturday, October 26th, from noon until 5. Call 279-7431 for more information.
Sponsored in part by Ernest Financial.
And welcome back to the Health and Wealth Show. That's just a little something we've got going on later on in the month. And we've got some more stuff to add to that we just wanted to get that out there and let people hear about it. And speaking of letting people hear about stuff, we've got David Woods, He's a candidate for mayor, and the election coming up on the 7th. That's next Tuesday. They always have those things on Tuesday.
Coming fast.
Coming fast, David. You're right. 6 days.
And many of you will remember David's dad, Charles Woods. And we were talking about, you said people would come up to him and they had
stories.
But one thing, I've got the book that I don't know who wrote it. It's not a very thick book, but it tells about him and everything. And I found it in on one of the floors of the building down in Dothan. And there was a box of them. And they were throwing them out.
Was that the Sunrose Lake?
Yes, that's it. I got it. I've tried to get him to autograph it, but I never did catch him before I left down there. But I've got that. You say there's a new one coming out?
Right. An author was writing a book about plastic surgery in the U.S. and organ transplants, and she featured a doctor called Joe Murray, who later won a Nobel Peace Prize in medicine. And she was doing research on his early career, and she ran across, this was a physician that treated my dad when he was burned, right after the war. And she got pretty interested in him, so she contacted us, did some homework, and part of her book mentions as interesting information about my dad, because she was so fascinated as to how he stayed alive with those kind of injuries.
Well, now, he actually stayed overseas for, was it almost a year before he got back home?
I think it was like 2 months, you know. It's I don't think anyone knows the exact date.
There was a lot of surgeries, and this would have been what, 40 what?
He was burned in December of 1944 is when the plane crashed.
So this is a ways back. This was a while back.
It's before we were born.
Yeah.
And then he was at Valley Forge Hospital for over 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, my mom moved up there from Dothan up to because he to be near him. She had a little apartment. It's a wonderful story. And you know, he was an orphan. He was given up when he was young.
Really?
Oh yeah. And when he was 6, he was adopted out, moved in with my granddad. And then after he got out of high school, he joined the Air Force, went to war, became a pilot. He was burned, spent several years in the hospital, got out, moved back to Dothan, and had no money. My mom was a secretary. She worked and supported them. And he built a house. He got a VA loan to build a house for them. And before the house was finished, someone came along and bought the house. My dad sold the house without... without consulting my mom, but the house they planned on moving in, but someone came along and it was he made several hundred dollars on the house, which at the time was,
and something clicked.
Sold it, bought the lot next door, started building a house for them to move in, but he put a for sale sign on the front of this house.
Get out.
It sold, and before you know it, he became a home builder without ever even planning to get in that business, and he had success at it. And that's really how he. Supported my mom and my brothers and sisters, and you know, I was the seventh of 9 children.
Now, he actually y'all actually adopted, or your mom and dad adopted some children.
Yeah, one, right?
One,
because
my
dad was a because he was an orphan, and you know, he always had a heart for orphans. There was a situation in Dothan that he was familiar with, and there was a child whose family had deteriorated.
Is that Ron?
Yeah.
I worked with Ron.
Good
Ron
memory.
Sport now. Is he still down there?
He passed. He had a heart attack a while back.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's all right. You know, he relocated. He went to heaven, and he's enjoying his
Ron
rewards.
Ron was, he was something
else. He was a character.
Now. He was.
Yeah.
So which order are you in the pick?
Seventh.
Of
We're the seventh child.
Yeah,
seventh
child. He's the one that didn't get away with nothing.
A lucky seven.
Ask him his birthday.
What's your birthday?
July 7th, 1957.
7-7-57.
Oh man,
that's some good luck numbers.
Did they go get a lottery ticket when you were born?
Our lot number for our house is
7.
WCOV is
7. Oh wow,
coincidental.
I'm totally, lucky sevens.
Totally coincidental.
Beginning to see a pattern here.
Hey, maybe I should take.
Hey,
but anyway,
hey, wait. When is the election?
October 7th. October 8th. I'm sitting here thinking Sam's not October 8th.
I think we should have it on the 7th.
We need to, listen, this is real important. We need to remind people it is next Tuesday.
Yes.
The election. This is a big election. And we need to turn out. People need to go out and vote. You know, we had some issues on August 27th with
yes.
the election.
Yes.
You know,
that's right.
Secretary of State did an investigation. He had 12 complaints about election irregularities. There were problems with the ballots, memory sticks, and our elections director is a disbarred lawyer. And that's a cause for concern.
Yes.
And what we need to do in this next race is really turn out and vote, just to make sure that our constitutional right is protected and that we don't have the same issues we had last time.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Secretary of State is involved. He'll have people from his office at different precincts. There are quite a few systems that have been tightened up. And hopefully we won't have some of the issues with machines not working and whatnot on the next election.
You think maybe some of it could have been lack of training?
They indicated some of it was lack of training, but it's a real big issue.
Everybody's got a voice, and they need to use it.
You're exactly right. And the best way to use your voice and the best way to make sure that your choice for Montgomery's mayor wins is to go vote. We need a lot of people to vote. In case there's any irregularities, we want to make sure that we're way over.
That's right. If you want your voice to be known, and you need to make sure that you show up on the 8th.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not the 7th, but the 8th.
Well, if you show up on the 7th, just sit quietly and wait.
There you go. Yeah. You'll be early.
You'll get there.
You'll be at the front of the line.
You'll be there.
At 7 a.m.
That's right. And, of course, polls will be open for like 12 hours.
Yeah, 7 to 7.
Everybody can get by there within that time.
And it's important people look at where their polling place is, because another thing that happened this past election is they reassigned quite a few polling places. So some voters that went to polling locations that they'd voted at for 20 plus years realized that they had to drive to another polling location.
Mm-hmm. And that'll get you messed up.
That gets you messed up. And what happened, you know, sometimes with people like that were voting during their lunch hour, they're in a hurry, they don't have 20 minutes.
That's right. That's right. So everyone needs to look ahead of time.
Yeah, and they were supposed to have been sent notices, but a lot of people, we understand, did not receive the notices. So
that's not good.
But you can go to the Secretary of State website, click on at your polling place, put in your address, and it will tell you which polling location you need to go to.
Well, David, I am really, like I said, very impressed with your knowledge of finances. Me being a financial guy, I know when someone knows these things. I can tell by looking at all these numbers you've got here and all the stuff you've been studying and analyzing. I see all the marks you've been making on their study and everything. It looks like you're really, really in tune to what this city may need in the future for a financial plan. And when I do a financial plan for someone, you know, we go into a lot of detail. That's why I can appreciate this detail that you have gone into to try to help the city get its feet on the ground and grow.
Right. And when you understand the finances of a city, then you can make better decisions about what we should do, what we can do, what's affordable, what's not affordable. Because there's a lot of areas where the city needs to make improvements. But we can only make improvements where we have the resources. You know, for example, look at maintenance department, paving. We need to do more paving. We're only paving about 35 miles of roads a year. 10 years ago, we were paving about 55 miles a year of roads here in Montgomery.
That's a big difference.
I'll tell you another one, potholes. You know, we've had issues with potholes in Montgomery.
I've noticed.
the maintenance department actually have pothole crews.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And need to send them over toward my... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, through attrition, that the number of people that work on potholes has shrunk over the last few years. The city's lean in quite a few areas, and they've had to be because they're dealing with limited resources.
That's right.
We have a lot of debt and existing obligations, and so the city's done what they need to do, and it's run pretty they ran fairly efficiently. But, you know, if you defer maintenance for very long, it will eventually catch up with you. And with our roads, that's an issue with a lot of people. We need to improve our roads. There's quite a bit of federal money available. And
there's matching money, but we got to put it up there.
Correct.
And we got to get it to match it.
You know, that's something we want to work on. And urban blight's another area. We have a lot of abandoned buildings here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was going down yesterday with my dad, going down Norman Bridge.
Oh.
And this
near the old Y-102.
Yep,
went right
by there, and I said, "Yeah, I remember that." But and you're in that neighborhood too,
right? We're still there.
Yeah, and I remember the morning the antenna fell.
Yes, 96.
I came over to see, and this thing evidently it was constructed to just like fall on itself.
They pancake.
And
that's what guided towers do. They're supposed to come straight down.
It was the most amazing thing because I mean, there's like you could throw a rock and hit somebody's house.
Yeah,
and that antenna didn't touch anybody.
Well, getting back to this matching money.
Yes.
People ask me about a 401k. How much money should we put in there? I said to you absolutely need to do your maximum match.
Right.
So it makes sense for a city or a state to do the maximum match.
Well, correct. Because some of these matches are like 80-20. The federal government puts up 80%.
Exactly.
The municipality puts up 20. But here's another area that's attractive. Montgomery is actually in an opportunity zone. These were created in 2017 as part of the tax reform.
Right.
And they're designed to provide funding to areas that are plagued with urban blight, best way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Areas that look like some of Montgomery's areas.
That's right.
And we're going to aggressively go after these opportunity zone dollars in an effort to try to clean up a lot of Montgomery. We've got, there's over 2,000 abandoned homes that the city's identified. And it's a job to identify abandoned homes, by the way, for the city.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
They have to, you know, each house they have to go, they look at the tax records. They actually have to visit the house. They check with the power company, gas company, to see if it's got power or not. But a lot of houses that don't have power or water still have people living in it.
Oh, yeah.
And they have to go through these houses, and it's time-consuming. But anyway, they have about 2,000 identified that are abandoned and need to be knocked down because abandoned homes increase crime. There's a theory called the broken window theory. And it basically is if there's a house that is noticeably abandoned, crime will increase in that area.
I believe that.
So what municipalities need to do is take these houses down.
Clean them up.
Mobile's done a very good job. They started with this plan 4 or 5 years ago. They received some federal funding. And the city of Mobile has knocked down a lot of houses. They've renovated houses. They've improved some of these low-income areas. And the neighborhoods are happy because if you're living next to an abandoned house, it causes you some concern.
I would think so.
Now, are some of these like absentee landlords,
yes,
owners, and stuff, they may live in another state.
A lot do, and there's an array of issues. You know, some of these homes are bought at tax sales, and people just hold on to them thinking that they'll sell them to the city or they'll sell them to a developer who may buy land on Norman Bridge Road, like where you were today, and put in some type of development.
But I see what you're saying. If we don't use those dollars, we lose those dollars.
Exactly.
And that's not smart.
No.
Not in the financial sense.
No. So it's a good time to be in trying to get involved with redevelopment because of the funding that's available. And we plan to be very aggressive on this because people in these neighborhoods need to have these buildings removed, these houses removed, in order just for their homes to be safer. And what you do is you remove the house, bulldoze it, haul it off, level it, plant grass. And the city did this year in the new budget, they did raise their urban blight program by $100,000, which was a nice bump that should allow them to spend more money each year to take down houses. But we really need to be spending several million dollars a year to replace houses. The budget for 2020 right now is $500,000 a year. But we talked about Detroit earlier. Detroit, Michigan is a city that has attacked urban blight. Mayor Mike Duggan has knocked down tens of thousands of houses since he became mayor in 2013. Mm-hmm. He, and by the way, he was a business leader. He was CEO of Detroit Medical Center before he ran for mayor. Detroit probably has one of the best mayors in the country right now.
And it tells you something about business, people.
Yes. He's in his second term, and he has turned a city that was just basically abandoned, he has turned it around. Downtown Detroit is vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like I said, he's knocked down something like, I think it's 20,000 houses. Hmm. They were knocking down so many houses in Detroit 3 or 4 years ago that they couldn't bring in enough dirt to level the lots once they hauled the homes off.
Mm-hmm.
They had to slow down because the cost was going up because they were having to haul dirt from 50 miles out. And that gets real expensive because the transportation cost of dirt is actually much more expensive than the dirt. Hmm. So they slowed down the demolition of houses in order to keep the cost at, I think it was running about $10,000 a house, whereas when it got up to like $16,000 or $18,000. And the federal government had this program they were funding, but at that lower level. So they had to slow down in order to utilize or maximize the funding that they received. Detroit, under Mike Duggan, has received $130 million in redevelopment in urban blight funds.
Man, we could use some of that.
And it's not a real Detroit's not a real big city.
Mm-hmm.
It's less than a million people.
Right.
You know, it's not like Atlanta or Chicago or Los
mm-hmm.
Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's under a million people. It used to be 2 million back in the heyday, 50 years ago, but it's
right.
under a million. So if a city under a million can receive $130 million.
Right, I see where you're going.
We're 200,000, so we're a fifth the size. We'd be happy with a fifth of $130
that's
million.
That's what I'm saying. That's good math, David.
I would go down to the stagecoach and pick it up and bring it back.
Hey. 25.
People need to be thinking about that on Tuesday.
$26
all those
million.
Dollars. Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about out of time. Hey. Time flies when you're having fun.
Your clock runs fast here, Rusty.
I guess it does. I've been trying to keep an eye on it. I appreciate you coming in, David. I know David does as well. And I hope our folks out there listening take the advice, make sure they get out and vote on Election Day. Remember, David Woods.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me be on here. And, Rusty, I just want to say we have a desire to serve all of Montgomery. We want Montgomery to be the most unified, prosperous, and safe city
mm-hmm.
in the country. And that will be our goal. We're going to wake up every day as mayor thinking, how can we make this a more unified, a safer city, and a more prosperous city? And we're going to focus on it. We're going to involve a lot of people. And we're going to do our best to really make this the type of city that people want to live in. We want to attract more people here. We want to turn it into a growing city. And it's very possible. And here's the last thing I'll say. We're going to do our best to make sure that Montgomery is the city of your dreams.
That sounds like a wonderful thing.
City of your dreams.
I like that. The city of your dreams.
Thank you so much, David. David Ernest, thank you. We'll be back again tomorrow night.
Yes, we will.
We might actually do something right. I don't know.
Oh, we done it right tonight.
Let me push it forward.
I think we did.
I think we did do it right. And we're going to go now. And we'll be back tomorrow night. Thank you, David. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
They're gonna make a big star.